Okay, good morning, everybody. Sorry I was late. Unfortunately, I couldn't control that. But good morning to everybody. So I'm going to call the regular meeting of Metrocast to order for January 29th. If we can all stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Hello.
Pledge of Allegiance.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God. Indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Matt, could you call the roll, please?
I sure can. I will start with those on the phone and online. First Selectman Lent, Town of Easton.
Here.
First Selectman Vitale, Town of Fairfield.
Present.
Thank you. I will skip Ken because he's on the phone right now, but Ken
I'm
Flato.
here, Ken.
Yep, thank you, Ken. Ken Flato, Proxy Mayor, Denham, City of Bridgeport. Mayor Chess, Town of Stratford. Thank you. First Selectman Rooney, Town of Monroe.
Thank you.
And First Selectman Tesoro, Town of Trumbull. We have a quorum.
Thank you very much. Okay, next item on the agenda is public participation. Is there anybody here from the public who would like to make a comment?
We did not receive any requests for public participation. For those of you that have not been to meetings before, we did have an issue about a year ago where we got a Zoom bomb. So we modified our public participation policy. We now live stream the meetings on Zoom. So they're live streamed currently, or sorry, on YouTube. I apologize. We also recorded, obviously, for FOIA. And with our agendas that go out to the public, there's a link for people that would request to have public comment to basically a form to fill out. And we will then send them the link for the Zoom, but we did not receive any for this month. So that's kind of our public and publicization policy now in order to guard against some of the issues we had in the past with meetings being disrupted. So we have that. Is the short story.
Okay, well that's nice. And of course, the public's always invited to come to our meetings and comment if they wish. So thanks,
And you
Matt.
can also always come in person too.
Yes, that's very true. So I just want to welcome Dr. Chess here to our meeting. Nice to have you here, Mayor of Stratford. Wish you well, and thank you
Thank you,
for being
Vicky.
part of our team here now.
Looking forward to playing with you guys.
Great, thank you. So let's move forward. Next time on the agenda is the election of our officers for this session. So, Matt, do you want to introduce that? You want me to take it over? Well, how would you like to handle that?
Yeah, so just for everyone's awareness, for those of you that have not been here before, we have three executive officer positions within MetroCog based on our bylaws. It is the chair, the vice chair, and the secretary. For anyone that might become secretary, just for your own knowledge, the notes and minutes are kept by MetroCog staff. We will provide all those for you. And really, the biggest thing you need to do as secretary is just sign resolutions as necessary as we pass them. But all the minutes will be taken by staff and provided a draft to you for your review and comment before they're brought before this body. So you don't, as a secretary, you don't have to be the note taker and the minute taker. Just wanted to point that out there for anyone. Staff takes care of that piece for you.
Not adding to anyone's
Yeah, I don't want to make you, yeah, I don't want to give you more work.
Okay, so I'm going to call for any nominations from the floor for chairman of MetroCog. I have been sitting as chairman for the last 2 years and enjoyed my position here, and I think we've done some great things, and I'm certainly looking forward to doing more on things, great things for our six communities part of MetroCog. And thank you, all the staff here, and Matt, for all that you've done to make that job seamless, actually. So any nominations from the floor for chair?
I would like to make a statement. I believe that Selectwoman Tesoro has handled her position in a very respectful way for all communities involved. Now that there are new members here, we have to take into consideration that this organization is here to help all of our communities. It goes around. Vicky has been very transparent in the way she has handled that and has handled it professionally. So I will make a vote for her to be chairman of MetroCog once again.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
First selection room. Very kind words. I'm
So we have a
going
motion. Need a second.
to need a second for that.
Second.
Thank you,
Yeah.
Dr. Chess.
Just happy to. Oh.
We got a second from Mayor Chess. Thank you, Ken.
Yep.
Okay. Any discussion? Or I should ask,
Any other
any other
nominations?
assistant? Yeah, shouldn't assume anything. Any other nominations from the floor? I'll ask again. Any other nominations from the floor? And one more time, any other nominations? Okay, hearing none, is there any discussion? It's very quiet. Okay, hearing none, no discussion. So let's bring that to a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anyone? Oh, thank you.
Yes. That was everybody saying.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your support. I appreciate it. And now I'm
You have to move seats, you say, right?
going. Okay, thank you. So let's move to the vice chair. I'm looking for nominations from the floor for the vice chair. And I'm going to make a nomination for that. And I'm going to nominate for Selectman Terry Rooney for that position. And Terry's been a great advocate also for all that we've done in MetroCog, sitting with us. And I would like to give his name and put it forward as the new vice chair of MetroCog for this session.
Second, unexpected, but thank you.
Okay.
Dr. Chess, seconded.
Any more nominations from the floor? Any more nominations from the floor? Any more nominations from the floor? Hearing none? Okay, any discussion? Hearing no discussion items or discussion from the floor. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, aye. Give up yourself. Okay,
That's the name, so.
that's unanimous. Thank you very much. Okay, our next officer is secretary, and I'm going to make a nomination of Christine Vitale for selectman of the great town of Fairfield. I'm going to put that forward. Can I have a second?
Second.
Second from Ken.
Thanks, Ken. Okay, any more nominations from the floor? Any more nominations from the floor? Again, any more nominations from the floor? Okay, hearing none. Any discussion?
I was just at a point of order. So, what if, she's up for election? So, what if she doesn't win? What would happen then? Just.
So from a bylaw perspective, Dan, it would the seat would be vacated, so we would at our next regular meeting, we would vote for a new secretary, should that
Okay.
happen.
I just didn't understand the mechanics. All right, thank you.
Yeah, but we're late by a month on the vote because we didn't have our December meeting, so we wanted to make sure we did the election of officers as close to the where the bylaws state them. So that's why we're doing it in January. And depending on what happens in the special election of Fairfield, we will make accommodations, but we would just that seat would be vacated and we would revote at a subsequent meeting.
All right, thank you very much.
No problem.
Thank you, Matt. Any more discussion? Okay, hearing none, let's vote on first electing Christine Vitale as Secretary of MetroCon. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Unanimous.
That's unanimous. Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank
Thank you
you.
all. Thank you all for agreeing to be part of the executive committee. Much appreciated.
Great. Okay, let's move on to our next item, which is the approval of the minutes from November 20th, 2025. Can I have a motion to approve those minutes?
So moved.
And I have a second. Thank you, Terry. Oh, can I second that?
Yeah.
I'll second.
Yep. I don't know if it's Terry can second.
Okay. Any discussion? Okay, hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Derek,
Okay.
you good?
I'm good.
Okay.
All right.
That's unanimous.
All right, we're going to move forward to our action items. Item A, Can I have a motion to move that forward, please?
So moved.
Okay.
Need a second.
Oh, sorry. Can I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Thank you, Judge. Okay.
So this is an action item to add a project in the town of Monroe to our local transportation capital improvement program. It is a project that I was identified by First Selectman Rooney in a discussion I was having with him, and we thought it was a worthwhile project to bring to this body for funding. It is a realignment of the intersection of Route 110 and Wheeler Road in the town of Monroe. It is currently a very skewed intersection at acute angles. Causes traffic and safety issues. It's very difficult for the drivers to see oncoming traffic. There has been some accidents and near misses at that location. So this is funding for the LOTSIP program to provide Town of Monroe with construction funds after they do the design as is required by LOTSIP to reconstruct and realign that intersection to make it more of a teed up intersection for safety in performance increases. And Terry, anything you want to add, feel free.
Yeah, so thank you for putting this on the docket. Just a quick correction, Matt. I know we speak quick, but it is the Route 111 of Wheeler.
111, sorry, not 110. Yeah. I do that.
Well, 111. If they didn't cross, I wouldn't have brought it up, but they did. So I just don't want it to be misunderstood.
That's further south.
In Monroe, the northern part of Wheeler Road, as it goes out to 111, has a very bad line of sight issue. It's something that the community has been complaining about for decades.
Yeah.
I spoke to the police chief this morning, who stated that he tried to get this done back in 2006. After hearing from him and talking to Matt, there was not a mechanism to do it, or it was all DOT at that point, making it a little more difficult. The LOTSIP operation makes it an easier process. From what I understand, we have done projects with LOTSIP in the past that have been, we have them going on that are very successful. So this would be a big help for the community in that neighborhood, as it's been kind of a thorn during, you know, school hours and things of that nature. So I would hope that this body would support it. Thank you.
Thank you. I certainly support that. Any more discussion? Okay. So all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Dan Reese and Ines.
Okay.
Thank you.
Let's move to action item B. Can I have a motion to bring the West 5 Water Utility Coordination, which is attached with C on this agenda, to the floor? I'll make that motion.
Thank you, Vicky.
Can I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Terry.
So just quickly, this is a resolution that will authorize myself to enter into agreement with WestCog. As we have discussed previously, our attorney and our consultants that were approved by this body previously to assist MetroCog and you all and your ratepayers and residents with the Pura Docket 250403, which was a change in control of Aquarian Water Company to AWA. This resolution provides me the ability to enter an agreement with WestCog for funding from them to support the work, because our legal work and our consultant work have really been on behalf of both MetroCog and the WestCog municipalities as a combined entity. So this would allow for us to get reimbursed for some of the costs related to that Aquarian change of control application to Pura.
Okay, any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Resolutions.
Yeah. Okay, so moving forward, we finished with the action items. We'll go to the discussion items. Item A, our financials is attaching D to the agenda.
I will turn this over to Carmen Kelleher, Finance Director, give you some of the highlights. We are 6 months through the fiscal year now, so we want to provide an update as to where we are. So, Carmen, please feel free.
Yep, so this accounts for the first 5 months through December 31st. We're currently on track or under budget with everything. We do expect the rent to increase probably April. We will be starting construction next week on the office, so very exciting. Budget letters will be going out this week. We're keeping everything the same as last year.
So it's for municipal dues for the new folks. There's a municipal due structure that we've had in place for a while that we probably need to revisit at some point. But for this year, we are keeping it flat. So those letters will be going out to each of you next week.
Thank you for keeping it flat. We appreciate that.
And Mayor Hoyer told me that you guys paid us.
It's like we do. We do so much.
It feels like that.
No, not at all. But we sincerely appreciate the continued support and funding that you all provide for us to be able to do the work we can with and for you.
And so, as we discussed in June when the budget was approved, we are currently have a slight deficit due to the PURA fees. I think we budgeted 70,000 for the fees, and we're at 177. But then, as you just approved, Westcog will be reimbursing us for some of that.
Yeah, I don't have a dollar amount on the reimbursement yet. I'm working with Francis on that, and we're still, as will be the update later in this discussion item section, I'm going to give you an update on here where we're at. So there are still costs being incurred. I will say that the consulting costs from Chuck Ferlat and his company are basically done at this point. It's really just the legal costs. And Tony McLeod, our attorney, is coordinating very closely with David Ball, who represents four municipalities, including the town of Fairfield. So they've been kind of working together to try and keep all their billing down, which has been helpful. And I will say Tony has been very generous with kind of public rate deductions he's been giving us on a regular basis. So while it is a large number, I will say, I think as I think I said to most of you, I think the opportunity to intervene in that case and provide the significant kind of municipal opposition to that change in control was one of the big factors in it getting denied initially. So I think from that perspective, I believe that this body acted appropriately on behalf of its residents and constituents and ratepayers to try and do what we can to contest this change of control, which we do not believe is in the best interest of municipalities or your residents. So, and we'll continue to monitor that and provide updates as we go. But we did just want to make mention of it. It's not something that's unexpected given those are costs we had budgeted, but we're going to always be costs that kind of overran our revenue, but we are still keeping the rest of our operational costs as low as possible to try and mitigate any need to dip into the fund balance at the end of the year to cover costs.
Yeah. So if there's any questions, happy to answer.
Any questions? Okay. Let's move on then to item B under discussion items, which is the regional POCD.
Yep, so we are in the process with a number of your staff updating the Regional Plan of Conservation Development. For those of you that don't know, there is a requirement, state statute, that municipalities every 10 years update their POCD. The COGS likewise are on a 10-year POCD update cycle, as is the state of Connecticut. So we are in the process right now of updating our POCD. I'll turn over to Megan Sloan, Planning Director, for any specifics on where we're at.
So we're working on the content right now. We're going to be presenting the draft goals and objectives and strategies to our different focus groups, a lot of which are made up of municipal staff and local stakeholders. I want to congratulate all of our photo contest winners. We had a winner from each town. We're going to be releasing, those photos in a newsletter, as well as some of like the appendix and like informational documents that's helping to inform the plan, which would be in a summary of existing conditions. We've tried to keep it short, but it's 100 pages. And then also just how all the different towns' goals and objectives align with past work we've done. So be on the lookout for those documents being released publicly. And we hope to have a draft plan out, over the next few months for people to start taking a look at.
Yeah, and I'll be providing to you all those goals and objectives directly. So you'll get that directly from me. And but as Megan said, significant numbers of your staff in various focus groups have been participating. So and we always, as part of the work we do and as required by statute, our regional POCD has to align with the goals and objectives of all your local POCDs. So we did a lot of kind of initial work going through each one of your municipal POCDs and making sure that the work we're doing is in alignment and in agreement with those documents as well.
Can I just ask a question about that?
Sure.
So I haven't seen any of that, and I would like to see it before it's released to the public for Easton. Is that possible? So I
Yep.
could, have.
Yes, only the it's being drafted right now internally. The focus groups, which are really municipal staff, will see it, and you will see it the same time as they do as draft before it goes out to the public.
Well, I just
And
want to quickly say that, when you're doing this, our POCD already emphasizes that we're a reservoir town. We have three reservoirs, so we're a very special case, and so we need to be treated very uniquely. And it's already in there, but I mean, we're just very constrained and by that. So and I know in our POCD, we even say things like, I mean, we have to actually, reduce traffic in town, for example, not increase it. Like we're like required to do that. So, I mean, we're actually more or less required to have, like basically no development in town and no commercial development because of the water supply. So I just want to make sure that, we're treated in accordance with, the requirements that we have for public safety and, for the preserving the water supply to, 700,000 people. So,
thank you.
yeah, Dan, thank you. And that certainly is taken into account as part of our regional plan. But I'll make sure you also have an opportunity to look at those sections and review them before anything goes out publicly.
I just want to emphasize, I mean, we're not allowed to have any kind of commercial development. We're not allowed to have any kind of transit districts. We're not allowed to have, anything that the other towns can have, because it's basically like a big nature preserve up here. And that's the way to think about it. Okay. So thank you very much.
Certainly. Understood. Thank you.
With some lovely residences too.
You should see the house I grew up in, as it wasn't that lovely.
Okay. Any more discussion? All right. Hearing none, let's move on to item C, which is Pura and Aquarium.
Yeah, so I kind of mentioned it previously, and I have provided you all a couple updates via email. As I said previously, the PIRA on November 19th denied the initial application from RWA slash Aquarian Water Company slash Eversource for the change in control. That denial by PIRA was appealed by the applicants to Superior Court in New Britain. The judge had granted an expedited schedule for that hearing. And that appeal, what basically precipitated from that appeal was that the judge remanded the decision back to PIRA. He took out a couple of the statutory items that PIRA used to deny the initial application. One of which being the fact that the legislature, through the enabling legislation in Special Session Public Act 24-1, had, in his view, in his interpretation, had set forth the guidelines and the requirements for the governance structure of both the expanded authority board, that's the 6-5 authority board with the majority vote from the RWA region, as well as the representative policy board structure, which is a weighted number of votes based on population. As it turns out, the representative policy board weighted structure actually, for some municipalities that have Aquarian water surface, ends up with 0 votes for that town because they have so few people that they don't have a vote. So those are a couple of the items that PIRA ruled on that they was their reasoning behind not approving the application. So the judge pulled those pieces out. But I will say that based on some articles that have been written subsequent to that appeal, there's some misunderstanding of what the judge actually said to PIRA in order for them to kind of re-review their the proceedings. It was kind of stated in a couple articles that the judge basically told PIRA to approve it, and that's not the case. There's nowhere in the judge's ruling that he said PIRA must approve. He did pull out the governance structure piece as something that they could opine on. But all of the other statutes that guide PURA and that they have ability to use in their determination of whether or not a deal should be transacted are still in force. So our argument, and the Attorney General submitted an objection to the process schedule that RWA and Eversource submitted recently. One of our issues is that we believe that the remaining items that PURA still is allowed to use at their discretion to adjudicate whether or not the transaction should go through are still valid, and PURA already ruled that they denied those. So from one perspective, we believe that, PURA really should still deny the case. I did also, as an update to you all, I met with legislators from both the MetroCog region and the WestCog region with the attorneys last Friday. And one of the reasons for that was to bring them up to speed, but also because the judge's interpretation was specific to the enabling legislation that was passed in the summer of 2024, we wanted the legislators to really fully understand how the judge was interpreting that legislation. And we believe he was interpreting it outside of the intent that the legislature had. Really, there was a section in the legislation that says, upon PURA approval, the governance structure shall be, and then it goes on for a while after that. The judge interpreted that to be basically that the legislature had already set forth the governance structure. Because PURA is a creation of the legislature, PURA can't override the legislature in their setting of the governance structure. We argued that the word upon there, so upon PURA approval, gives PURA the ability to rule on all of those things. So we are currently working with legislators to figure out if there's a potential opportunity to revise that enabling legislation to have a more direct and more detailed legislative intent that potentially gets at the appeal ruling that the judge had. So with the case being remanded back to PURA, the applicants submitted a process schedule where they're looking for an expedited process. Partly because one of the reasons that they stated in their appeal for an expedited appeal was that they are incurring costs of about $409,000 a month at RWA for the servicing of the bridge loan they took out in order to go through this entire transaction. So every month that they go on, they have to write a check for another $409,000. From our perspective, that's not our problem at the moment. So we objected to the process schedule. Just for your all's information, the schedule that they proposed is supposed to have a draft decision by tomorrow from PURA, which I don't think they're going to have based on the fact that they haven't ruled on anything yet. And RWA/Eversource was looking for a final decision on February 18th of next month. So PURA has not yet provided any response to either the process motion or the objections. And their objections were filed by our attorney, Tony McLeod, by David Ball. Also, the Office of Consumer Counsel filed an objection, as well as the AG's office. So we're kind of in a holding pattern at the moment to see what PURA says to that process schedule motion by the applicants. And then I will let you all know kind of where we're at once that comes through. Any questions? I mean, I know it's a lot, but any questions?
Yeah, I had a question. Can you just send us those objection documents? Just like send
sure.
us.
Sure. Yep, happy to. I'll send all four in one email just so you have all four of them.
Like, the appeal, just all the documents so people can just read them. I forgot to ask a question on the last topic. I apologize. But so when we're doing our planning, there's the AICP Associate, American Planning Associate, the certified planners. So yeah. Like typically, municipalities, like their zoning boards, they'll hire people who have the required credentials. They're certified planners to do their POCDs and do their planning. So, I mean, I would hope that's the kind of, basic, qualifications, that we need. So, I mean, it needs to be done by someone like that, because, all the towns are having problems with laymen who have no scientific background in anything in hard science, right? They have no planning degree. They have no engineering degrees. They have no background in hard science at all. And they're making very important,
technical, arguments and zoning decisions. So, I mean, I really would emphasize that, you need to have the people with the right credentials doing the planning. If you want an accountant, you need a CPA, right? Like this shouldn't be done by laymen. So I hope anything we do is reviewed, by people who have the proper credentials, because, this is a big problem at the local level. You have volunteers trying to make zoning decisions and they're not really qualified and they get emotional and everything else. So I just really hope we keep it like a rigorous professional analysis with people who actually, went to school for this and had an interest in it during their education and aren't just people who casually came in later and decided to take a swing at it, as we see on the local level. And it's a disaster of some of these local zoning boards. So I hope we can be very rigorous and scientific about, whatever proposals we have, so they can pass muster and stand up to rigorous scrutiny.
Sure. Well, I would, I think to that comment, I would say we are a professional planning organization. We conduct planning on a daily basis. That's the work we do. Megan Sohn, our planning director, has her AICP, as does our deputy director, Patrick Carlton. So we are fully, we have planners that went to school for planning. That's who we hire to do our work. And we also have consultants that are assisting us with this that also have credentialed staff that went to school for planning and have the appropriate credentials as well. So from that perspective, there is no need to worry about that. The work we do out of this office with both our staff and our consultants is always done with the highest level of professionalism that is available.
And I want to add that, we're really relying on our consultants, who do have their AICP kind of for that third party review and to vet things, as well as, the tremendous knowledge brought by, our local staff. I think all of our towns have different, level, or I don't want to say levels, but areas of expertise. And, we've just been getting a lot of really good feedback from town staff as well on ways that, what the work that we've been doing can improve. People are very candid to tell us, where we need to, fix things. So.
And there's an engineering component too. I mean, typically there's, town engineers and planners. Mm-hmm. So, I would just hope those are the kinds of people, that we're listening to, and we're not just listening to the public who's emotional or uneducated. So that's really what I'm trying to point out. It needs to be scientific, like a laboratory. It needs to be not just emotional rhetoric or uneducated people having, influence, So that's what I'm trying to point out. You need to have people with engineering degrees and planning degrees, and not just, laymen who have a strong emotional opinion about something that's not backed up rigorously by any kind of, data or science.
Yeah, well, I understand what you're saying. For a second, I would also say that, part of our policies that we have at MetroCog is to engage the public in a fully transparent manner as part of all the planning work we do. So while we do have professionals that are working both at staff level and from a consulting perspective, we also do a significant and robust public engagement process as part of all the planning work to ensure that we are hearing from the public, because they, while they might not have the educational background of a planner, they do understand their communities. We want to make sure that we're hearing from as many of those folks as we possibly can throughout the process. It doesn't mean that everything they say gets put in the plan, but we want to hear from everyone to understand their thoughts, concerns, where they see there's areas of improvement, so that we can make sure we're identifying as many of those as possible throughout the entire region.
So I'll just follow up the comment after sitting on this board for 8 years. I just want to attest to the fact of the professionalism, the expertise that comes from MetroCog itself, and then from our own town departments as well. I just want to make sure anyone who's new to the board realizes that, that the Ventrab does great work for all of us. And I, again, just want to emphasize that to everyone. And yes, we deal with constituents all the time who share their concerns with us. So we're all used to that. And it's not easy to deal with it sometimes, for sure. But we do, you know, make sure that our own constituents understand, certainly with our the planning information. And as I said, expertise that comes from MetroCog and, again, from our own town departments is second to none, as far as I'm concerned, at least for the town of Trumbull. I can speak for my town. But again, certainly it's always good to hear your concerns and to for MetroCog and for the board to address them. So thank you.
Yeah, if I could say one thing, I think what we always need to recognize is we face two things, right? We face the court of law and the court of public opinion. However, here, everything is organized in a way that it will stand up in court. We've had many conversations about that. So just to say that that area is always covered and protected, and the court of public opinion, we all have as public figures, will have to absorb that because there will always be opinions that we may not agree with. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
I'm good.
You good?
Yeah, I think we're good.
All right. So let's move on to item D, which is the office remodel.
Yeah. So this goes back to the lease extension that this board authorized back in, I forget when, summer?
Spring
of 2025. We were up to renew our lease anyways. During that time, we were informed by the building that the tenants next to us had vacated part of the space on the other side of our wall. We were potentially looking for a little bit of additional space. So we worked with the building as part of our lease renewal. They've also built in a remodel and expansion of our office, adding about 850, 900 square feet of office space. So that work is going to be commencing. They're actually over next door right now, starting to do some of the work over there, but that work will be commencing on next Monday. So for the time of the construction, we will be available. Most of us likely will be working more remotely than we will in the office, just based on the fact that this will be an active construction zone. They're going to be taking down most of the walls in the middle there, putting up new walls, running new wires, doing some additional cores underneath from the floor to bring electricity to all the cubicles in the open area. So we will be working more remotely than we are in the office, although people will be here. We do have meetings scheduled where we've already reserved conference rooms downstairs that we have available to us for meetings to make sure that we don't have folks, you know, your staff and people up here in the middle of a construction zone. But I just want to let you all know that we will be more remote than we will be here, but we are all still available to come meet town staff at your locations. We will be working every day. So we're not taking a month and a half or 2 months off. We will be working on a daily basis. We will just be doing it more of it remotely for a short time while the office is being remodeled.
So you think a couple months?
Yeah, the construction schedule right now is 8 weeks starting from next Monday. And we will be here. We do have the conference room is not being touched. So people will be coming in and doing work here and taking meetings here. But we're also trying to make sure we stay out of their way. We met with the general contractor last week. They were possibly anticipating a longer schedule of working around us being in the office on a regular basis. So when they found out that we were willing to kind of take most of our work outside of the office, at least for the critical times, they said they might be able to even expedite that schedule a little bit sooner because they were kind of always planning on having to kind of be a little bit more accommodating of our schedules. So my thought was if the quicker we can get them in and out, the better it is for all of us. But we were all available. All of our phones connect to both our phones and our email. So that every staff member is fully available throughout this time. I just want to let you know that the office itself might not have some people in it on certain days just because of the construction going on.
So our next two meetings, you got one scheduled February 26th and March 26th.
Most likely be remote only, virtual only. If we might not even need a February COG meeting depending on where we're at. So I will keep you all posted, updated on that as we get there. At present time, we don't really have anything for the COG to resolve. and take action on for February. So it's likely that February might get canceled anyway. So, but if we do have it, it will be virtual only because I don't, you all don't need to be walking into a construction space.
March, we might be back in August.
Yeah, March, we might be back here. So we'll keep we'll keep you updated on the timeline. We're going to, Colleen and I and Pat are going to have weekly calls with the contractor, see where they're at, make sure they're staying on schedule, and we'll continue to have an update on kind of where they're at from their timeline as well.
Great. Any more discussion? Okay, let's move on then to item E, which is the housing bill zoning update.
Yeah, so as you all likely know, House Bill 8002, which was passed in a special session in November, is a bill specific to kind of looking to create more housing in the state of Connecticut, both affordable and market rate. There's a number of provisions in that bill. I'm not going to go through every single one of them today. I will say, as a bit of a shout out, CCM and COST are hosting a forum tomorrow morning. You all should have been invited to that. Starts at 9 o'clock. It is basically a hour and a half discussion. There'll be three planners from one from Capital Region, one from Naugatuck Valley, and one from RiverCog, kind of doing a presentation on the overall bill, what the municipal requirements are, what the municipal obligations are, what the COG obligations are. So I'm not going to go into every detail here. And we do, the one thing I will say on the housing bill is there's a, as part of the negotiations after the initial bill was vetoed by the governor, all the timelines have been pushed out. So we have a lot more time than we did previously to kind of discuss at this body, how you all want to proceed with these housing growth plans that are required. Just as a high level, the municipal growth plans and regional housing growth plans for the MetroCog region are not due to be submitted to OPM until June 1st of 2029. So we have a significant kind of lead time to get to there. So, you know, one thing I've been saying to folks that I've been talking to them is, you know, we have time to figure out the details and the machinations of how we're going to make this all work and how we're going to work with you and your municipal staff. We do anticipate having a couple advisory groups that we will convene with your staff, as well as some of your planning and zoning commission members, to make sure that the work that we're doing and the work and what they want to see at the local level is all being incorporated into the work that we're doing kind of with and collectively on behalf of you all. So we'll have many more discussions on this. I'm not going to go into every single piece. The one piece I did want to bring up to you all and just make sure it was something that you might be interested in is the bill does contain really two pieces of zoning regulatory updates that you have to do. The first one is your municipal parking standards have to be updated to comply with the new law. And what that parking standard is basically a maximum parking of for studios and one bedroom apartments, one space for two bedroom apartments, two spaces, and for three and more, three spaces. So the town can't require more than that. So your zoning regulations have to be updated to reflect that. The second piece is section 16 of the bill, which is the middle housing. And so middle housing based on the bill, which is anything between 2 and 9 units, nothing more than that, it has to be between 2 and 9 units, on areas and parcels that are already zoned either commercial or mixed use. The town has to come up with regulatory framework that allows for basically, it's called summary review in the law, but it's really administrative review. So the town's planning and zoning commission would adopt through their normal processes, their normal public hearings and that sort of stuff would adopt zoning language, regulatory language that allowed for those developments based on the criteria set forth by the town. And there is no specific criteria set forth in the bill. So each municipality is able to dictate what that summary review would look like for the types of parcels in terms of lot coverage, in terms of setbacks. Those sorts of things are all still fully up to the municipality and how they want to deal with that. But it would basically allow for administrative review, which all that really means is if an applicant puts in an application that meets all the criteria that the town has set forth, that project would not go to a full public hearing. It would be reviewed and approved administratively by your planning and zoning director, land use director, land use administrator. If that project were to come in and does not comply with with the regulations set forth by the town, then that project would still go through the same normal public hearing process that you would have without summary review. So one of the things that in that bill also is the COGs are receiving additional funding specifically for housing support to support you all and support our agencies to work on this kind of housing stuff. So one of the things that I was going to suggest and ask if anyone would be interested in it is we have funding to go and do a solicitation to bring on a land use attorney to work with your municipal staff, your zoning commissions, to draft those zoning regulations. So I know that's something that you would probably have to do normally through your land use attorneys, through your zoning commission. So what I'm offering here is that MetroCog would be paying for that work of a land use attorney to work directly with your municipal staff and your zoning commissions to come up and draft that language that they could then bring to the town through a public hearing to get adopted. So my hope is that it would be a benefit to you all to have a land use attorney that could work specifically with your staff and with your commissions to draft that language. So it's not a cost to the town. We would be covering the cost fully out of the housing money that we are receiving at MetroCog.
Makes sense.
So I just wanted to put that out there. If that's something that is of interest, we are already working on drafting the RFP to put out publicly to get proposals. So as long as there's interest from municipalities, we are going to move forward with that, and we will bring that back to you once we have selected someone. We'll bring that back to you to approve me entering into contract with them.
So you say, have you had any conversations with these staffs? Because I haven't heard anything from anyone.
There's been a couple statewide. The Connecticut chapter of the American Planning Association did something last week where they had a lot of municipal staff, planning and zoning, land use administrators, zoning commissioners there, kind of giving a summary overview of the bill. We have not had direct conversations with your staff, although I have had with some staff. Emma, I've talked to them online in Fairfield a number of times. I'm Ryan Harrigan, the planning director there. But we are happy to kind of, and we will be bringing, you know, we'll be reaching out to your staff for the selection process to see if anyone's interested in being part of that selection committee. We will do a full open bid process as we always do for all of our work. So we will certainly reach out to your staff for that, but also reach out to them specifically on what they're looking for out of it to make sure that when we go and put the procurement out, that we are kind of identifying the areas that the town would like assistance with. So it's really just for you all to get some, land use, specific land use regulatory work without you all having to hire your, or, you know, pay your land use attorneys that already do a lot of work for you. So we have funding. So I wanted to try to use it to the best of our ability to support you all in the work that you have to do. And just for everyone's reference, at least at present day, the deadline for adopting those zoning changes is July 1st of this year. There is potentially an opportunity for that to be pushed back because there is some discussion at the CCAPA event that there is some ambiguity about what summary review actually means. It's not clearly defined in Connecticut statute what summary review is. So it is possible if the language there gets revised a little bit, I'm going to be pushing for that deadline to be pushed out to like January 1st of 2027 to give some additional time. Because if they change the guidance, we probably should have some additional time at the local level to adopt those regulations. So at present time, it's July 1st. I'm hoping maybe we can get a 6-month reprieve on that to give us some more time to work with you and your staff to get those regulations adopted.
Yeah, how are you going to pick the attorney?
We do a full public procurement process. We will put out a request for proposals. We have some lists from various organizations of pre-qualified. We will get it to folks. We will receive proposals. We will set up a selection committee made up of MetroCog staff and municipal staff. We will then review and rank the proposals, depending on how many we get. And then if we get more than 5, we will shortlist up to 5 of them to do interviews. That selection committee will sit on the interviews, they will rank the interviews, and we will select the highest ranked either firm or individual with the experience that we believe is necessary to do this work.
All right. During that process, if you want to poll the members, I'm sure, you know, they might have some personal experience in their town.
You know? Yep. Yeah, we will do that. We always do. We said poll members so that, you know, if people, you know, land use attorneys that might be interested.
Okay. Any more discussion on that? You said there's an event tomorrow.
Tomorrow at 9 CCM.
I didn't see anything in my
calendar.
My calendar.
I'll forward as soon as we leave here. I will forward all 6 of you the invite from CCM and cost.
Hold it.
Okay, that's fine.
Thank you. I guess on my schedule. What's the location of it?
It's virtual.
Oh, it's
on your schedule?
It's all virtual.
Another question. When you were
listening
at the seminars and they were talking about mixed use, did they say anything about like former institutional uses? Like, say you have a church that's no longer a church, but the building's there. Were they contemplating that as it's normally an institutional use, not a mixed use? Did they say anything like that?
So that the specific regulatory changes that are prescribed in the law for the middle housing is specifically for parcels that are currently zoned either commercial or zoned mixed use. So it would really be dependent upon how that parcel on which that, let's say, church is zoned currently. I would assume it's probably not zoned mixed use if it was a church, but it goes back to the current zoning status of the parcel on which that, in this case, church would be located.
But are they going to go by the local designation, or are they going to go by the, you know, some state regulator's going to redefine?
No, there's not, it's based on local zoning. So, you know, the state through state legislature gave municipalities the authorization and ability to zone their local parcels. So this is using the locally zoned parcel structure as set forth by the town zoning.
Thank you very much for clarifying.
Yep.
Your comment.
Okay.
I'll send that one. Thank you. Okay, let's move forward with our next item. That's the brownfields.
Yeah, I'll turn this over to Patrick Carlton. So just a quick update on our EPA brownfields program.
Yeah, as I mentioned to you all before, we have an EPA. We have three cooperative agreements with EPA, a revolving loan fund and community-wide assessment program for site assessment and remediation purposes. We've worked with many of your towns in the past. You know, if you have sites, candidate sites that need assessment funding, phase one, phase two, phase three, or cleanup plans, you know, please let us know. We'll work with you and your town staff to see if it's eligible. And if it is, we could fund that work under our EPA cooperative agreements. And the same goes for remediation. We have a revolving loan fund that allows for loans and some grants to clean up eligible sites. Obviously, they have to go through a site eligibility process that EPA signs off on. But just wanted to know, put it out there that we do have those open cooperative agreements and we have funding to work with you all, you know, should the need arise.
I just want to say one thing. I did work with Patrick and Mark, Matt on a project in town, and it was very successful. You were able to get us some grant money, so I really appreciate that with our new community center, and we're going to be looking for more. The only one caveat is municipal leaders, maybe we should, and you're going to bring this up in the process, but the building has to be constructed not by the municipality, correct? To achieve the brownfield grant process, if the municipality actually built the project.
In order to be eligible for brownfields funding, you just can't be liable for the environmental contamination.
Oh,
so if you were the one, you know, and most towns aren't.
Aren't.
But,
correct.
You know, if there is, you know, a viable candidate, they'd be on the hook for the remediation. So you just have to keep that in the back of your mind that there can't be a responsible party.
The only thing that comes to mind, and this is a friendly conversation, yeah. The only thing that comes to mind, if a town had built a building in the 60s, right, which a lot of these buildings are,
yeah.
There are contaminants within the products that
asbestos,
they were using at that time.
Materials, PCBs, things like that. That's
a little bit
a different conversation.
Yeah.
That's a different,
that is a different
yeah,
conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Because that just happened to be those were the building standards
of the time.
Of its,
yeah.
Yeah,
so yeah.
Clarify.
But
yeah,
if
so
you were disposing of waste or stockpiling waste, or there was an actual use, you know, that created environmental challenges, then that's a different story. But in terms of building materials, that's something we can work with the town.
Yeah, typically the responsible party stuff is related to, you know, let's say it was
intentional behavior.
Intentional, or, you know, it was your public works yard and you did a bunch of oil changes and you just let the oil, you know, instead of catching it, you let the oil drain out and you made an oil plume. That would be, you know, the town's responsibility. We wouldn't be able to fund that. But as Pat said, building materials that are
have asbestos, PCBs, and window caulk, those sorts of things. That was just what was there. There's no responsibility on that. That's the only thing that existed at the time. So you can't be held liable for using that because that's what was available.
Well, I learned another new thing today. Well, I'm glad I asked the question. Thanks, you guys.
So yeah, if you have anything, please come to us. Reach out to Pat and I, and we will. And Hannah works very closely on our brownfield stuff, so we'll work directly with you and your staff to make sure we can get moving whatever you'd like to get moving on that. There are also DECD brownfields fundings in the state of Connecticut that if you have sites and you want to talk about them, we're pretty well versed in that in those programs as well. So we're happy to assist you all with either getting money directly from us or working with the applications from Connecticut DECD. And we're happy to provide assistance there whenever possible as well.
And I think the new round for DECD brownfields funding was just announced. Very recently. The applications might be due in March,
I think, end of March or mid-April. So just let us know. We're happy to work with you on any of those projects if we can be of assistance.
Yeah, could I just ask a question? So yesterday at the cost conference, I was talking to an engineering firm, and they said there's a deadline coming up in February for brownfields grants. So I think there's like an urgent one coming up. And then yeah. I was just wondering, do we have a list of the brownfield sites for the MetroCog members that you can send out? Because the one I asked about previously is in Bridgeport in Black Rock Harbor next to the Fairweather Yacht Club. There's a big site that used to be a boatyard, and it's right on the harbor between Fairweather and Captain's Cove, and it's contaminated. And I asked at one of these meetings, could Bridgeport, go for a brownfields grant for that? So if the deadline's coming up, I think that's definitely one that should be looked at. I know they wanted to build like condos on at one point and it was too contaminated. So, I don't know if it's on your brownfields list. It should be, I suppose, but that would be one that if the grant, money is available for Bridgeport and they're not, I don't know what they're doing, but if that's one they should probably be getting the money for and remediating.
Yeah. And I think what you're referring to is the DECD funding that I just mentioned. That might be the deadline in February. I thought it was March. It could be February. I'll go back and take a look, but obviously we'll send that information out. In regards to the site in Bridgeport, obviously we have to work with the site owner. So if it's a city of Bridgeport property, they would have to come to us. If it's privately held, they have to come to us through the city. So we have to work with the owner of the site. But obviously we can talk with Bridgeport. I think Ken's no longer on the call, but we can definitely bring it to his attention and see what he wants to do. I think we're definitely aware of the site, and there is an active list that the Connecticut DEP keeps in terms of brownfield sites statewide, and then we have a list for our region as well. So we can get that information out to you.
Yeah, that would be great. I did ask about that one at one of these meetings, so that's why I'm just following up. And then it was the Laurel, well, I don't know how you say this, Laurel Engineering Associates. They were the ones in Plainville that were telling me it's in February. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Tim.
Okay, any more discussion on that? Matt, let's move forward to our last discussion item.
Yeah, last item is the CPRG, the Climate Pollution Reduction Grant Program, for the people that are joining us for the first time or second time for Dan. CPRG, it was a federal grant through the US EPA. It provided $1 million in planning over 4 years for the 72 most populous urban areas, urban metropolitan statistical areas, MSAs. So for our region, the MSA is basically the Bridgeport to Greenwich up to Danbury, more or less Fairfield County. Bridgeport, Sanford, Norwalk MSA is technically the name of it, but it kind of stretches all Fairfield County. So we've been coordinating directly with WestCog, who is the other half of Fairfield County, on putting the required documentation together. We have what is referred to as the Comprehensive Climate Action Plan, which was supposed to be due December 1st. They pushed back the deadline of that to July 1st, June 1st,
June 1st,
June 1st.
But we were basically ready in December. We're finalizing a couple pieces of additional kind of appendix information that'll be put into that, and that will be sent down to EPA for approval within the next month or so, maybe two, depending on how quickly our consultant gets some of the additional stuff together. And we will bring it before this body for discussion and potential adoption as the kind of pollution reduction grant plan for the region. And it's really just focusing on ways that we can reduce our greenhouse gases, opportunities and strategies to make more energy efficient buildings, make more energy efficient transportation networks. Those types of things are what we're really focusing on there. As the name suggests, climate pollution reduction, it's really focusing on greenhouse gas emissions, both localized and regionalized, to try and figure out how to lower the impact that we are making on the environment.
Okay.
I hope you emphasize that, you know, we shouldn't be cutting down the trees. I mean, you know, that really needs to be fundamental in all the towns. You know, it really should be like a pariah move to cut, you know, clear cut sites and remove trees from a carbon, you know, standpoint. So I hope that's just, you know, really part of this.
Yeah, there's a forestry sector that's part of the planning work that talks specifically to the need for both maintaining existing inventories of trees and also providing and expanding that inventory of tree canopy cover and carbon sequestration through trees.
Okay. Any more discussion on that item? Not, we'll just go to our final item on the agenda, which is the other business, which we've already discussed. Our next meeting dates, if necessary, are February 26th and March 26th.
Yep, and as I said, those will likely be virtual only if we need them, but we will keep you all updated as to whether or not there's a need for February, and then we'll get to March, we'll figure out where the office is at, and you know, if we are back open, we'd love to have you all here in person to see the remodel, and if not, we'll do it in April.
Great. Okay. It is now 11:22.
Are you going to do new business?
Oh. We don't typically have new business, but we can add it.
Well, I just wanted to comment on the 40-year deed restriction on affordable housing, because that's one of the things I'm working with the legislature on. It's a real stumbling block, and there's a lot of other ways to enforce whether a unit is enforceable or not. So to have a draconian encumbrance like that, it's just like a non-starter. So I asked the governor about it yesterday at the cost thing. It seems like, you know, like in Easton, for example, we have a lot of apartments, garage apartments and ADUs, and people would be more than willing to rent them out. They just don't want the 40-year, you know, deed restriction. And the town could make up the delta, make up the difference between the affordable rent and the market rent, say it's $500 or whatever. And so like tomorrow, you know, we could have all these affordable units and we wouldn't have to do anything other than just subsidize it. And, but this 40-year deed restriction thing just like doesn't work. For, you know, who wants to, you want to be able to buy and sell a home freely. So I told, you know, the representative from Bridgeport, Felipe, at the Bridgeport conference, and the governor yesterday that, you know, this is something from a policy and legislative standpoint. I mean, it really is like, if you just got rid of that and they could enforce it any other way they want, like you could have the state enforce, it'd be like filing your taxes, you file a form that you're in compliance, you could suddenly have all these affordable units in like all the towns, because, you know, you can, it's statutorily possible right now to charge a fee on real estate transactions to fund a affordable housing fund, or you can just give them a property tax credit. I mean, these deltas are not that much, like $1,000 studio versus 1500 market rate. Like, it's not the end of the world. So if they would just get rid of the deed restriction, you know, like tomorrow you could have all these affordable units. And then the other policy point was just the land trust fund, you know, like in
Massachusetts and the Hamptons, you know, Cape Cod, Nantucket, there's a 2% fee on real estate transactions, and it goes to buy land trust land. And the governor had supported a bill even in the past, so I asked him about that. You know, and you could do it on houses that are more expensive houses, so you wouldn't hurt the first-time home buyer or the low-income. But, you know, that's another one right there, because we need to be able to fund the land trusts like they do in Massachusetts and other places. It's very popular, you know, and so, you know, the money adds up, and then you can buy land trust land, because we really just need to, you know, all these towns need to buy as much land as possible and set it aside, you know, to be preserved forever, because we don't have enough in our area. And so, you know, those two items, I would like, you know, if this group gets involved in legislation or lobbying, you know, anybody who agrees with me or wants to, you know, work on that, you know, please let me know. But I mean, it's so simple. If they just got rid of that deed restriction and enforced it some other way, you could have a ton of units, you know, like tomorrow. And it's just this leftover draconian encumbrance that isn't working. So it's a common sense solution that would work like almost overnight. So anyway, I just wanted to point that out. And the governor seemed to be receptive. And then I thanked him for the farm revaluation too. I mean, that was a big deal. You know, we have to, you know, try to preserve farmland too, and all over Connecticut. And we have a lot of farms in Easton. So the valuations, you know, he's suspended that. So I don't know. Those are like legislative items. I'd like if MetroCog could, you know, think about that. Or if anybody agrees, you know, with me, we're trying to get a group of towns together for those, you know, those legislative priorities. You know, they seem to work in Massachusetts and other places. So.
Thanks, Tim.
Yeah, no, and I work pretty closely with folks legislatively. You know, I certainly think as you said, there was a bill proposed at least twice in previous sessions related to the conservation set aside from home sales. It never made it all the way through. I'm not sure if it's coming back this year, but it's something I'll certainly keep an eye on. And you know, on the 40-year deed restriction, as you note, and as you said, for anyone that doesn't know, that 40-year deed restriction is part of the legislation, 830G legislation for affordable housing and affordability. Currently, it's in statute as a 40-year deed restriction. I do know that as part of the housing bill that was passed in November and we discussed earlier, there is a Council on Housing Growth that was established as part of that law. I know from talking to some folks that are participating that one of the first things that they are kind of taking up is a discussion on how to potentially revise the 830G legislation to make it more appetizing, make it more implementable at the local level. So to that point, Dan, I think that's something that's certainly understood by folks and is being looked at. And you know, where possible, I'm happy to provide both tracking of bills and discussions with legislators that can get us to moving towards something that might be a little bit more implementable on a longer term basis at the local level.
Yeah, I would appreciate that. Yeah, let me know. And anyone else who wants to be, you know, the governor did say towns can do it right now. You know, if you want to do it in your individual town, put like a 2% tax on the real estate transaction and fund land trust. You could do that now in your own town, but it would just be, you know, nice. I mean, in Cape Cod, they do it even on, you know, the lowest cost houses with the lowest income people, and they don't mind. Like they like it because they're preserving land. I thought maybe they would object, you know, it'll make it, but they don't. So, you know, it's really popular. And it's a great way to get the money you need to buy land and preserve it forever, because, you know, most of it's been destroyed, just like the wetlands. That's why we have the wetlands laws, because they're most of our wetlands were destroyed. I mean, you look at, like, I don't know, Country Club of Fairfield. I mean, that whole thing was built on fill, you know, and that's the kind of, they destroyed most of the wetlands in Connecticut. So they're like an endangered species. That's why we need to protect the wetlands, you know. So we need to buy the land and preserve it.
Okay. Anything else before I ask for a motion to adjourn? Okay, hearing none, can I have a motion to adjourn?
Second, we'll
We are adjourned. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, all.